Ready to go. All right, welcome to another episode of the Beer Opinions Podcast. My name is Pat Berger from Kaiser Tiger and Patty Longs, and with me, as always, is Bruce White from the Chicagoland Beer Tours. How you doing, Bruce?
Oh, man, doing well. Summer is here. I'm just rocking and rolling, recovering from a nice long Memorial Day weekend that was beautiful for once.
It was very nice, and you know, we were all complaining about that cold weather, but like, give me a break. Now it's
the switch was flipped.
Yeah, now it's 90 something degrees.
And we're all riding, you know, your son's rugby team to the state championship.
We are. Big shout out to the Chicago Wapiti youth rugby team. And my son Nick, who plays hooker on the team, is they're having the state finals on Sunday. Should be epic. I'm sure everyone will be there. In wonderful Berwyn, Illinois, the nice. Home of Svengoolie. I assume he'll be there, too. Yeah. we've gotten the weather out of the way, the pleasantries. Talked about my son's rugby prowess. Now we should probably introduce our guest. We've got a guest with us, which is always great. Carson Souza of Pig Mines Brewery. He is the brewmaster and impresario of all that goes on there. How you doing, Carson?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
It's been talked about a long time having you on, and we finally did it. I'm not sure what the holdup was, to be honest. I don't know. This podcast is really a top priority for me, so I'm always on top of it. welcome. You are enjoying our collaboration beer we do every summer, the Monchichi Throwdown.
Yes, sir.
Mexican lager. It is wonderful. Nice and crisp.
It clean. Is really good this year.
It really is.
It's the best of, how many years have we done it?
Three or four.
Yeah. I think it's the best yet, personally.
It's hard for me to remember last year's. I really liked last year's. I really like this year's. I don't know.
It's hitting the spot for me right now. Question: how collaboration beers? You know, I actually have had this before in previous years, and it's delicious. How does that process kind of work for like? How did the idea come about? How does the beer style? How much work goes into it?
Let's see.
Do you want to answer that? Or we could kind of both jump in on that?
Yeah. I mean, for me, they're all different. But this one, and this is, I do a lot of collaboration beers with Carson, and I love doing them with Carson because it is truly a collaborative effort. I mean, we'll talk about what kind of beer we want to make. Very vague kind of idea of what kind of beer we want to make. And then we'll just occasionally text each other or call each other and go, hey, I got an idea for the beer. Let's try this. Let's do this. Let's, you know. And the recipe kind of slowly builds up, but doesn't really get put down on paper until I show up. And then we kind of go, all right, what were we doing? All right. And then we sit in front of his computer and we put the recipe together and then we brew. And what I really like about also brewing at Pig Mines, although this is going to change soon, but I know you hate your brewery setup right now, but I love it because it is... it is a giant homebrew setup, and I actually feel like I know what's going on, whereas sometimes I go to these breweries and, you know, someone's just pointing and clicking on a computer and suddenly the beer is being made and, you know, I don't really have a hand in it. But there, you're making me stir, you know, we're troubleshooting things, we're, you know, if there's a stuck mash, we're all, you know, putting our heads together, trying to figure out what to do and all the rest of it. I thoroughly enjoy it.
Was this the ladder photo? Wasn't there? Was that the famous
ladder? No, the ladder, that was at the cidery.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Everyone was making fun of me because I looked like, because I was about to fall off a ladder. Carson, what do you think about our collaborations?
I can reiterate on that. Yeah, I mean, Pat and I always just throw kind of an idea. We'll have, like, for this beer, we did it a couple of years prior, and every year we put a little tweak onto it, and what didn't work last time, what will work this time. I think the hardest part for me is when Pat leaves and then I got to take the beer from there. And like, you know, he brewed it with me and we're thinking, hey, this is going to be fucking awesome. And then, you know, in the past years, it hasn't always gone that way. We have no space in the brewery currently, so to be lagering, because Pat just refuses to brew ales with me. although we did, I think we did an ale. You know, Mexican lager yeast is easy once you figure out the deployment of it. It's been a little sketchy also. So now that we figured this rhyme or reason out, yeah, it's a great collaboration. And I think, I mean, to be honest, you know,
you have called me with some panicky calls early on, that first batch especially, when we didn't know how to handle that. Essentially, we use, it's called Mexican lager yeast, but everyone thinks it's probably Modelo's yeast.
Yeah, it's a White Labs. I'm not sure where they propagated it from. I believe it is one of the Modelo's. I'm not totally sure.
But it is highly susceptible to diacetyl.
Yep.
And
plus, in a rushed factor, that is the anti-diacetyl, or I mean the, or shall I say, the gate opener for diacetyl is rushing things. So you rush something, you get it in a timeline, it doesn't always work. Diacetyl can show its face later. And I think it wasn't crazy. Either that or Pat was just reassuring me. I have a very intolerant, I can smell it. I can literally smell it from across the room.
Sure.
So Pat, I got it right away, and Pat was like, "Nah, not so much." And you know, he's a certified judge, so he's going to give it to me straight. Or he was just reassuring me to tell me that. I'm not quite sure yet, but we burned through it all.
Yeah, so. I am a little more tolerant of diacetyl than I think some people are. But we did learn it basically that you need a proper diacetyl rest with this beer, with this particular yeast, right? And we also, with the advice of Y yeast, we raised the initial fermentation temperature the first 12 hours, I think is what really solved the problem.
Yeah, I think at the time...
Because we also needed more yeast cells.
Well, I think at the time it was Sarah Hegarty was involved with White Labs, and I was like, "Hey, Sarah, this thing's fucking giving me huge problems." And she's like, "Hey, why don't you try running it at 70 for the first 20 or 24?" And then we did. We dropped it down, and I mean, it was just amazing how this yeast acted after that. It was pretty profound.
Actually. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but it basically eats the diacetyl it produced, right?
Right. So. Acetolactate.
It's eating its own shit.
Produces, essentially what Pat's saying, acetolactate produces diacetyl, and then the yeast will reabsorb it. So let's think about what yeast does in a brief synopsis. It's like it shits itself out, and then that's how it multiplies. So it's eating sugar, and it shits itself out and creates CO2. So also in that there's a lot of different other
alcohol.
you know, there's a lot of things going on there.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about it on this podcast.
So basically, essentially the yeast will reabsorb the diacetyl. And I fight a lot of diacetyl in the brewery currently with ale strains because we're so overparred. We don't have any beer to sell. Like I've never been this low on beer in the pub ever. Between distribution, our off premise, and the demand that we've created at the brewery over the last 6 years.
A good but stressful problem.
Yeah,
it's
really hard when you can't facilitate what you need to. And that's, you know, ideally what the expansion is, but you know, we still got some months till then, and it's really busy right now. So we're fighting diacetyl because we're trying to rush beers. Yeah. So it is one thing. It's yeast produces it, even in the heaviest workhorse. There's a lot to it.
It's funny you mention that too, because I did take an off flavors class with brewers, kind of by mistake, and the fact when you said that you could just smell it from a mile away, basically, it doesn't surprise me because brewers just were so much better at picking up off flavors than I was at everything.
Well, and we do this shit every day. I mean, right, that's the thing, you know? And we're QCing beers. I mean, every good
sometimes
brewer
they are, and sometimes they aren't, though. You know, and I know I've, you know, witnessed brewers that don't have the best palates. They might be really great brewers because, you know, there's a lot. You got to wear a lot of hats, mm-hmm. you know. You know, and when it comes to those off flavor kits, I mean, I can smell the diacetyl a mile away too. I know I don't even have to taste those kits. You know, I can smell them all and tell you which one's which. But
yeah, me too.
I think I'm just more tolerant of diacetyl because of my love of Pilsner or Kel, maybe.
Yeah, Pat's like, so, hey, so I got this
I'm
keg coming
it all the time.
He's like, it's coming overnight. You need to get your ass down here. I come down. We start crushing Pilsners, and like within the first 5 minutes, I'm like, yo, this is deed out. He's like, no, it's not. I'm like, yeah, it is. Just like my Chi-Chi.
You know, after the first taste, I don't taste it. I really don't. I'll get it the very first taste of a Pilsner or Kel that's maybe been a little diaceled out, and then all I taste is wonderfulness. I really do. It just goes away immediately for me.
Well, that is one thing that can be deceptive about diacetyl. If you start a beer and you start drinking it, you'll get it right off the bat. And after you've had a couple, you know, a lot of people... The average beer drinker is going to hear that, you know, I mean, taste that. They're going to not know what it is, or it will just go blindsided. Like for me, I can smell it when you're pouring it in the glass, and it's just, I cannot choke it down. It's just one of those things. Yeah. I have an intolerance to it, and it probably makes me a better
fighting. Yeah. Yeah. And especially when it's something you're fighting on a daily basis, you are very intolerant.
Like, sure.
You know,
I mean, I had that before I became who I am today. I've always had that sensory analysis of diacetyl.
Sure.
So it's probably more or less a genetic.
It's also not really an unpleasant flavor. That's the other thing about, you know, people compare it to butterscotch. For me, it's the movie popcorn.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's what it tastes like to me. And I like movie popcorn.
Well, I like movie popcorn too.
I ate a giant jug of it the other day watching Solo, which was very good, by the way. We should start a Star Wars podcast. I thought it was good. A lot of people are hating on it. I like the Solo. But let's move on to the brew pub, because you're talking about how you know, you just can't make enough beer right now.
Yeah.
And part of that is the fact that the brew pub is very busy now, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And, I, you know, it wasn't always, right? Because you guys are in the middle of fucking nowhere.
So that was, you know, from day one, everyone's like, vegan brew pub?
Yeah.
In Mcchesney Park, Arkansas.
Yeah.
In Mcchesney Park, they're like, you know, it's all blue collar. And they're just like, everyone told Brian and I, like, you two are fucking stupid.
And
know?
That's just north of Rockford, right?
Yeah, it's north of Rockford. Yeah, south of the Wisconsin border, about 5 minutes, literally. It's right there.
Brian's the managing partner.
Yes, correct. Well, Brian's the sole owner. I'm the
sole owner. Oh, okay, gotcha. Yep. There you go.
So, you know, it wasn't always busy. It was a growing thing, you know.
And started in 2012, is that right?
So, 2012, yeah, we opened the doors in May. So, we just had our 6-year anniversary.
Congrats.
Thank you. And it wasn't ever like, it was never not sustainable. So,
you're always doing enough business to keep the doors open, is what you're saying.
For the most part. I mean, now, if anyone ever wanted to get paid, I think that's a different thing.
But you weren't getting rich at the beginning.
We were definitely not, you know, I think the first year we maybe turned like a $1,200 profit. You know, I mean, it wasn't anything.
Yeah, that's a labor of love.
So, you know, there was a lot of growth in the last 6 years. Now it's crazy. But we... What I attribute that to is distribution, obviously, in the market makes a name for the brand. And then also we concentrate on the food in the front of the house and service as much as we do the beer. And with that recipe and that never sitting still formula, great things can come about on how hard you want to work.
Sure.
So I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, if there's two categories, you know, that have grown exponentially in the restaurant drinks business, it's craft beer, obviously, and vegan dishes. You know, we even have one here at Kaiser Tiger, and it's not, it's simply there out of demand.
Sure.
People demand it. And so I think you guys maybe rode that, you know, something that maybe was very unpopular 6 years ago has kind of caught up to you, and it's not not as freaky of a thing in McChesney Park as it once was.
No, we absolutely built the demographic, which has not been easy. This has been an exceptional challenge coming from a guy who's been in food and bev his whole life. It's food costs for veganism is not cheap. And just recipe formulation in general, you're restricted. I'm a culinary guy, so.
Dude, I have trouble coming up with the one dish. Seriously.
Well, I was laughing, kind of thinking about this podcast because, you know, here we have the Sausage King of Chicago over here. And
maybe Bacon King.
Bacon King. And then
Abe Froman.
We all know Hot Dog's the Sausage
King. Yeah, that's true. Sorry,
Shout
Dog.
Shout out to Hot Dog.
Shout out to Hot Dog. And then, you know, the vegan a brewery. But I was looking at the menu and I was intrigued, and there were some vegan blogs that I kind of was checking out, and they were very complimentary, and I feel like they'd probably be hard critics. But the menu itself, if you didn't know it was vegan and just looked at the names of the dishes, it didn't strike me as a vegan menu. You know,
sure.
There's burgers, there's tacos, there's
yep.
your apps that you would usually find, or you know, some neat ones too. But
so we're a brewery,
yeah.
You know, and what we try to develop this thing called Vegan Gastro Pub Fair. So we don't want to cross. It's not like, hey, we're trying to do a linea in a brewery. You know,
yeah.
Although. To myself, I do want to up our culinary game just because there's so many great ingredients and ideas, and this is like a brainstorming improvisational thing that, you know, gets me stimulated immensely. But we also have to remember that we are a brewery, so
sure.
The so people that are not open to vegan food and they say, oh, I'm coming there strictly for the beer, I want them to be sitting and watch this food go by them and have familiarities, you know. We all do at the brewery. We want to be able to see, hey, those nachos are awesome, and they're nachos. Whoa, mm-hmm. maybe I should try those, mm-hmm. you know? But also, you know, having the key ingredients to make this thing really good. I mean, anyone can open jars of stuff and dump that stuff. And you see that in restaurants all the time. Basically, Sysco is like fulfilling mm-hmm. their whole menu, where we are going to probably in the future, I would say, and right now we've put a fine tune in between that, you know, making a lot of things in scratch in house. And then, you know, I want to elaborate more on that. I want to do that more. And I think everyone else that's involved with this project as well agree. You know, Brian and Kelly, the owners, are, you know, 28, 30 year vegans, and their son Everett, who's I believe 19 now, he's been a vegan since birth. So, you know, there's a lot of foundation coming out of there on what they like to eat. And then, you know, if we could start from 2012 to 2016 or 2017, 2018, there's no comparison in the food at all. I mean, it's literally, we went from Boca burgers to making our own burgers.
Mm-hmm.
You name it.
Yep. You know, Brian, I think when we first got together to do a collaboration, I think he was a little wary of me, you know. Because, you know, he's like, wait a minute.
The bacon guy's coming.
Yeah, this guy's like the opposite of vegan. Are you sure he's not just coming out to take the piss or what? You know, what's going on?
Leave the bacon in the car, man.
we get along very well now. Brian's a great guy. You know, and he figured out that I was really there for the beer. And, I'm curious about, you know, veganism and you know, I was actually raised by a vegetarian. People don't believe it. My mom's been a vegetarian for 50 years.
So this is one long rebel.
Do I have mommy issues? Maybe. I don't know.
But you still got cheese and eggs. And there's
She's not a vegan. She's pretty much lives on cheese and eggs and ice cream. But but you know, I am. You know, I try to be very respectful of people's choices, just as they should be respectful of mine when it comes to how you eat and what you drink and all the rest of it. You know, and so I was intrigued by it, and I love the one of the highlights of going out there and making the beer is when we have lunch, you know?
Sure.
Those nachos did blow me away. I got to eat the Impossible Burger last time I was out there. I have grown up on veggie burgers. My mom is a big fake meat person, and that's the best one I've ever had, like, by 1,000.
Yeah, fold, I would agree.
You know, they got the texture down pretty perfect. I think it's great. I think, I was as shocked as anyone when, you know, I was told there was a vegan brew pub in McChesney Park. I was like, are you sure that's not in Lakeview or Lincoln Park might work?
Yeah.
But you want them over, man. And I remember maybe the first or second time I went out for a collab, I got a flat tire. And I went across the street to the tire place, and I'm bullshitting with the guy, and I'm like, "Yeah, I was over across the street making a beer. You ever go over there?" He's like, "Oh no, man, it's vegan." And I was like, "Well, yeah, but you know, they got killer beer, and the food's actually good." And he was like, "Really? Maybe I'll go check it out." You know, and I think it just took years for people to go, "Yeah, I'm gonna go check it out."
Grasp that. I think when you use the word vegan, it's like a scare tactic. Like people are scared, you know, like they're, I think it's subconscious. Like people are just, whoa, vegan. Like that just scared that person. And then it just put like a immediate, like, it's like this as a bar owner. When you hear another bar, it's like, oh, they got popped by the ILCC for serving underage. That will never go away from what you just heard. It'll always stick in the back of your head. Oh yeah, they got popped for serving.
They're the underage.
Yeah, right. Even though it was probably not that case, it's just one of those things that you hear, and it stays subjective and subconscious in your brain. Yeah.
Well, and I want to say that the first exposure I had to like vegan type of food was, very, I would say probably extreme. It was very plant-based, and it was very, I would say, raw. Like, this is
sure,
like
raw veg. Sure.
Which is kind of like, so when that might be the thing that comes to mind. So it's neat that you have that menu that makes it accessible for people like me.
Absolutely.
Where I'm like, oh cool, I can get a burger here.
Like I grew up in an Irish household, Irish German household. Yeah. And Thanksgiving for us always had radish plates and scallions and, all different types of vegetables, carrots, and I still eat that as part of my diet. Like for lunch, I break out snacks like for, some of my other brewers, Jordan mainly will be like, ew, what the hell's that?
And then
Hayes and the other guys on the team and Sam and Hannah will just, take those fresh radishes and, crush them. So there is that whole raw side of it. And that's here's my thing is I don't always want to have everything in a deep fryer. It's like, granted, our menu's really good, but there's a percentage of our menu that keeps that pup fare, and it's deep fried. Your French fries, your underrings, your fried Brussels sprouts, your fried cauliflower. It's like, where can you point the arrow to where we can make it really good and still stay on that raw side? And there are things. So having that difference, you're absolutely is right. But then also, being able to manipulate that and make it a little bit better too. So there is that healthy aspect for the people that just rode 20 miles to the brewery on their bicycle or ran 10 miles. They don't necessarily want to just start crushing some, canola oil fries,
But that's what, when Pat and I do our ride on Saturday, that's what we're
doing. Yeah, I don't know what those people want because I don't really relate to them. But... God bless them,
Yeah.
Truth.
All right. Well, let's get to the beer. And I also want to hear, Carson, your personal story. How did you get into brewing? And, what were you doing beforehand? And what led you to this career path?
Food and bev forever. So it's food and bev being, 13 years old. Prep, dishwasher to prep chef, all the way to short order to... You name it. I've held a job in a restaurant in every position. I'm a musician before I'm a brewer.
Yeah, you went to school for music.
Yeah, right? So I went to University of the Arts in Philadelphia, and I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, where I graduated in 05.
Primarily a drummer, right?
I'm primarily a drummer, but I play everything. Yeah. But yeah, my proficiency is drums and voice. So, 05, the day after graduation, I packed my van or rental van from Boston and moved all my shit to Chicago because I was playing with a band called Tall Dark Stranger at the time. And
it's a good band name.
Like it was a great band, man. Yeah. If you ever can find any of those recordings.
What kind of music was it?
It's like a cross between Americana rock and roll to punk rock to country. It was very split thing. There were some pretty talented guys in the band, and we all kind of just put all our heads together. We all ate off the same plate and made some great tunes. Maybe I'll get you a couple cuts of it, and you can throw it in the podcast.
Yeah, there we go. Yes, intro song.
So from there, 2005, had to support myself. And how did I support myself through all those years? Was either front of the house or bartending or back of the house. So got a job with Emmett's Brewing Company in West Dundee and was a bartender there. Became like kind of essentially over the year and a half I was there, kind of one of the higher bartenders, and met the likes of, Bobby Hunter, now at Hofbräu, and Ryan Clooney, Crystal Lake, Mike Engelke, a.k.a. Gunner. He's at Emmett's still.
Emmett's has been quietly operating for, 25 years?
Something, a lot.
A long time out there.
And at that time, I was homebrewing a ton. So I homebrewed in college. So that's really where it started. I started making like a 15% cider, and we all used to, party and drink that kind of stuff. And I worked at a liquor store and was just always immersed in beer, and I always loved the idea of craft beer and the change up. So yeah, I just started bartending, and then I was seeing these guys like doing it. This is what they did. I knew it was backbreaking work, coming from a family of tradesmen and father and brother, commercial fishermen. My other brother's a 281 sprinkler fitter here in Chicago. So
shout out to Justin.
Yeah. Shout out to Justy. very proud of you. So went from there and, started like coming in. Clooney was like, I was like, hey, I want to do this. And those guys, a couple times were like, hey, come in and work for free. So I like close the bar late, and get up and run to Downers Grove to their other location and mash in. And that was kind of the start of it there. Then I left Emmett's and went to Prairie Rock and worked with a guy named Jim Wolfer, who's still my buddy. Love you, Jimmy. He's an awesome man and a great brewer. And a great mentor. Was doing some same thing, bartending over there and going in. And and that's really a funny story. Like my operations manager, Shane, was my boss at that time there. Another guy, Steve Heitman, who runs a Blackfin out in Schaumburg, who's buying beer for me now, was my boss. It was like all these names come back to you in the long run.
They do, yeah.
That's a cool thing. But, sorry to go on a rant, but I ended up being like, I want to do this. And Jimmy called Don Carlisle, who was looking for a brewer at the time. Didn't really want to pay anyone, so he took the Green Carson. And from that point on, I took the shit real serious. Like, I knew, like, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to probably most likely die either a lawyer or a brewer. So,
well, we're glad you didn't pick the lawyer.
Don,
former lawyer, I think you made the right call.
Don's my, Don's one of my competitors, essentially, in the demographic that we're in. And Don's a great brewer. So I learned some great Siebel sanitation techniques and recipe formulation from him to take it from a homebrew scale to where I can make commercially sound, clean beers. And then, I never sit still. I'm always learning. So from there, I just jumped on the horse and just beat it, I'm still beating it. So I don't know. From that point, I was like, I'm going to be a brewer. I think that's really where it came down to. I did leave Don after like a year and a half. Don and I had a fallout, and I told him, I do remember saying, like, the day he hired me, I was like, well, whether you hire me or not, I'm going to do this. And I remember telling him that, like, looking him in the face and saying that. And then I came into his demographic, and the rest is history. I did leave Don for quite a few years and worked for McCormick and Schmick's. I also worked with my head chef at Pig Mines, as he was the executive chef for Wildwood in Geneva. And I was still, you know, serving tables and bartending and doing all these things. McCormick and Schmick's that I was working with in Schaumburg closed at the time, and I got transferred down to Wacker.
Sure.
So I did that for a little while. And then, in this whole time, I had met Brian, and we were going to open a brewery. So that's kind of where that came from. And I was playing music. I was gigging. There was a million things I was doing. I was, like, running fiber optics and anything I could do to feed my daughter at the time. You know, we only had one child at that time, and it's a whole other story. But she's now 11, going on 30, and we really...
Yeah, kids make you hunker down, right?
Yeah, I did. And, the rest is history.
That's
at that
awesome.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a true kind of, you volunteered basically for a while to get into it and then, you know, part of your time and then worked your way in.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really amazing how much you actually do volunteer. Even at my time now, like, you know, you don't make much as a brewer.
Yeah, yeah. It's a passion.
Yeah, that's kind of a hot topic right now. There's a big article out talking about the sort of terrible pay of brewers and there are people getting rich in craft beer. The brewers don't seem to be part of that club. and they're doing all the work. So that might be the next... adjustment in this industry that is so young, you know, and that, I mean, this is why we're sitting here on a podcast talking about it, because it's evolving every day and so many growing pains, you know, from going from no one really giving a shit about craft beer to everyone seeming to give a shit. So that might be the next frontier there, huh? Where,
you know, it's both sides. There's the whole revolution. Then there's the dying, and then the guys who are the tradesmen, because mm-hmm. this is a trade, let's face it, get thrown in the middle and kind of just get the shitballs of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that might be a beer opinions for the future, that you might want to pull five guys in here and just let them go nuts, because I'm sure there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, we'll definitely get that way. The same things are happening in the kitchens in Chicago and, and it's good. It's forcing people like me to pay more in the kitchen.
But then,
because there's a demand for great kitchen help, and
it's hard to find.
It is very hard to find.
It really is.
Yeah,
and
you want to hold on to them. You know, this is a very transient industry, the restaurant business.
And cooks and brewers. Cooks and brewers are very, I mean, chefs and brewers, cooks and brewers are very of the same breed.
Sure.
Yeah.
There is a percentage, you know, I'm not going to lie, of like, you know, probably 60% of these fuckers that just can't handle their shit. They are extremely talented. They're great people, but they will burn you over a crack rock, you know? And I mean, there's something to be said for that. So. Or a bottle of booze, you know? I mean, it really is. We've seen it time and time again. I've seen it, and I've worked in this industry just like you have as well. And you know that...
No question.
It could be...
We're not the only industry like that, but it's a high-pressure, high-stress, work hard, play hard atmosphere.
Agreed.
That we're in. This is a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure.
I'll leave it with moderation.
Yeah, many people. Yeah. This all came up last week too in another article where it was talking about the high percentage of alcoholism and drug addiction in our business, and it is true. You know, I think there's other businesses that also suffer from such things, but we are certainly in it, you know. Anyway, that is another podcast. We'll, we should get into that.
Good idea, sir. Yeah. For the future.
Yeah. So many ideas from Carson today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's get into Pig Minds again. You you started there. What would you know? I've personally kind of seen the beer portfolio over there evolve. You know, from maybe the first time I went out there, it was heavy IPAs.
Sure.
And those are probably still a pretty big staple of your
absolutely
of what you're doing. But I've seen you branch out to a whole bunch of other things. I mean, you're very deliberate about it. You'll say, okay, I think I'm going to try this particular style of beer, and occasionally you call me about it, which is nice. You can go, hey, Pat, how are these selling? And what do you know what are your favorite aspects of them? And what are your what are the characteristics about say a fruit beer or something that you think is great? And and I think you probably call other people too and get their opinions, and then you put your hand to it.
That's smart. You can see what's kind of the populace, the front line, if you will.
It is. Why don't you talk a little bit about that and how you go about choosing what kind of beers to brew?
Okay. So originally the premise was very similar to Founders. It's like, hey, we're a bunch of guys who like beer. I'm a guy who likes to brew beer. I'm going to brew the beers that I want to drink, and I'm going to share them with you. And that has changed immensely.
When you find out it's actually not your living room.
Exactly. You know, that was a huge thing. I try to follow trends a little bit too. Let's face it. None of us are reinventing the wheel here. My number one thing out of everything is to have a clean beer. So, which in times can be the most difficult thing to make. Where I really come, though, with designing beers is I want to brew a beer that I like to drink. Or I get an offering. Pat might say, hey, let's brew a dry Irish stout. And I'd be like, well, I never really brewed that before, but hey, let's give it a whirl. Then we take the emphasis on the beer that was developed that's probably the best in the category. So if it's a dry Irish stout, how are we going to make this Guinness taste really good, right? Because that's what we're gaming to make is a Guinness. What yeast strain, da-da-da-da. And we go down that curriculum and we look for what's going to suit best for this beer. Another reason on spanning out on beers is that there's just a tons of styles. And there's a lot that I enjoy, and then there's lots that I don't enjoy, but a consumer might enjoy them. So I don't necessarily look at it for me anymore. I look at it for more of what people want to drink and what, you know, what makes them happy. So,
yeah, there's a fine line between sticking to your guns on that sort of thing and giving people what they want, because we are in the hospitality business
right.
at Absolutely. The end of the day. And if the customers aren't happy and the customers aren't getting what they want, your principles are great, but they'll be out of business.
You know, there's guys who do stick to that, though. And I kind of, in the local demographic, and I do see them struggling. And especially when they expand and they spend a lot of money. I don't know always that you're going to see them succeed, even though they could be like a world-class brewer.
I would think that this really struck me at Bug this year, Beer Under Glass. Sorry that I missed Butt, by the way.
I don't know what this Beer Under Glass thing is.
But, there were breweries. I would think it would be really frustrating as a brewery to chase trends, because here you have your favorite styles, you nail certain recipes, you just love them, and then all of a sudden the consumer tastes change a bit. I was thinking about this in the context at Beer Under Glass, in that all of a sudden the bourbon barrel, now it's summertime, so it's not faux bab, it's going to change a bit. But, you know, years ago, those barrel aged beers that were specially brewed for Beer Under Glass, there'd be lines. This year it was the New England IPAs. And really, there was not a lot of overlap in breweries because, you know, different breweries focus on different things. And it just struck me how difficult of a business that would be? Like, what decision process do you have in terms of, okay, screw it, I'm going to make a New England IPA, that's what people want, versus, well, in 2 years, it could be something else. And
it's going to be.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, we can definitely define that.
Sure.
However, you know, so the NEPA thing, my partner's just gung-ho on him. He loves him. So I'm like, cool, man. You know, I never brewed him before. I'm not an expert in this, but let's give it a whirl.
Sure.
And we've knocked some really good ones. And then we've also, you know, just did the beer naturally where it didn't haze out to a NEPA style, but it is all juice and no bitter. So we've kind of developed our own little category, and we're calling it a Midwest IPA.
Yes. All right.
So
there you go.
And moving forward.
There you go. What are you looking at me for?
Moving forward.
Fuck.
It's going to be.
I thought we banned this topic.
So we got NEPAs, right? And we, you know, one thing that I've learned from doing these IPAs, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's the dankest, bitterest IPA to the, you know, people love them. People love IPAs and they love hops. That will change in my prediction for this, just currently by my sales. I've always, from 2012, been a huge proponent of fruit beers. I've just always put fruit in the beer because people like it. Whether beer snobs want to acknowledge it or not, my sales will prove otherwise. And I think the new fad that you will see will be a fruit-based champagne beer style, clear, fruit-based Prosecco kind of style.
Like a rosé or...
Correct. Yeah, you're going to see more of that coming out now.
You've heard it here first on Beer Opinions.
Yeah. Seriously.
And Carson has predicted the future of...
the next wave.
The next wave.
Which will, it's, I bet, have an equal amount of disdain.
It's got to go back to drinkability. It's got to be. No. It's got to be. I mean, if you go crack a can.
We have our first Brut IPA. I don't think we've tapped it yet, but we got it last week.
Who's that from?
From Pollyanna.
Okay.
The first one I know of that's being made in Illinois. But that is a big trend out west.
Brian drying out some yeast there.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of... it's, you know, the
pendulum. All these IPAs have dried out yeast anyway, so.
Yeah, the pendulum always has to swing. So this one is clear. You know, it's supposed to be crystal clear. It's supposed to look like champagne.
I'm sure he's a world class brewer, man. He's a great guy and a great brewer. So
yeah, Brian. Yeah. Shout out to Brian, out at Pollyanna. Who knows though if it's going to take off? Who knows what the next thing is?
I don't know either. So many guys are brewing different beers. And there's a lot of great beer out there. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of shitty beer, but there's a lot of great beer right now.
There's a lot of beer.
There's a lot of beer.
Yeah.
And if you can hold, that's another thing. You know, you look at these BA statistics of guys closing their doors. I mean, Green Flash just closed their doors. I mean, it's pretty amazing. How do you go from 200,000 barrels to closing your doors? Well, I can tell you one thing. Probably when you were doing 1,500 barrels and then you went to 200,000, you know, There's some big room for error in there. You know, like with our business plan, it's just built to like 5,000 barrels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at
yeah, and those aren't the breweries closing. I mean, what, you know, I think the breweries getting hit first are the bigger ones.
The big regionals.
They are.
They've got
but
to
they started
sell small. A lot more beer, you know?
You know, it's like my buddy Matt over at Half Acre. I think he's doing like 40,000 barrels a year. I mean, that's a lot of fucking beer. And then you look at, you know, the Deeth Regiment, and it's, you know, huge. I don't even know what their numbers are, but I know they got 800 barrel fermenters. Like, that's, you know.
Revolution you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they're doing a lot of beer.
Yeah.
You know, and great brewers, world-class brewers again. So, you know, finding that intermittent is probably going to be the big part, and everyone seems to be supporting local. So you're, the stuff that you bought 5 years ago, like the... Your New Belgiums are getting pushed out by the Spiteful's. Yep. They're getting pushed out by the Half Acres. So, you know, you're going to see that.
Do you worry change. With your expansion that, you know, right now you are sort of benefiting from the fact that Pig Mines is a little scarce?
I am not worried in the one least bit. My package availability is Bombers. No one sells Bombers, and we're selling the shit out of it. So once the canning line's in place, and so I'm doing close to 1,500 barrels this year. To jump to 5,000 barrels as an end game is not that big of a jump.
Yeah, it's not that
big. Not only that, we can't solidify any accounts currently. So we've developed accounts in the market, yep. which this is essentially hurting us because we cannot solidify yep. the demand that we've created. Now, we are on the Wisconsin border and we're not in Wisconsin. So if I have to displace 1,500 barrels a year, am I going to be able to do that? Yeah, so there's zero worry in my mind in that. Now, if we were to jump to, you know, 50,000, yeah, there'd probably be some thought process and a better business plan. But currently, yeah, I don't see it being any sort of an issue. I would rather have room efficiency and safety for my staff rather than be just, you know, cut at the throat and, you know, dying at 41 of a heart attack. I don't need mm-hmm. that. You know, I mm-hmm. want to make some things a little bit more simple. And I don't care if that puts a simple financial burden on us, which that's not the case. We've been doing this for 6 years and the growth is not an immense growth for us. It's not like, you know, we're jumping to, you know, it's like, I look at Metro, I look at, you know, Doug and Tracy, you know, they great crew over there, great beers. And I look at where they were, and I don't know what their exact barrel age is, but you know, they're sticking to a one branded beer or, you know, one style of beers. They're not, you know, they've built their business plan on that and they're able to grow and create a bigger room, a bigger tasting room, now have a tasting room, a bigger system, and able to get more beers in the market. You know, for us, you know, it's a little similar in the factor that, you know, we want to just be able to touch out. It's like, Pat, can you go get a 6-pack of Pitch Slap right now? No, you can't. So we haven't even opened that avenue to be able to go get a 6-pack of Pitch Slap or a 4-pack of Sweep the Leg cans. You can't do that.
Right.
Which, by the way, Pitch Slap is still one of my favorite names in the market. So,
well, thank you.
To that.
It just came from me living in Boston. Yeah. I lived on the borderline of Southie.
Yeah, yeah, for
and
sure.
That's, you know, yeah, there was a lot of fights going on back then. For all those people out there that think I named it as a misogynistic and derogatory statement, it has nothing to do with that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Since you brought it up. I mean, you know, I think we should touch on it as part of the history of Pig Minds. You guys were embroiled in some controversy concerning a beer name.
Yep.
It was called Panty Dropper and
PD.
PD.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't the only panty dropper on the market either.
No,
there
wasn't.
Were a few other breweries that, you know, it's an old crude saying that. Did not sit well with a certain, especially once you guys got a little bit higher profile, you know, because you had it for a while,
sure.
No one said anything. And then you reached a larger audience and people said things like national news outlets were saying things.
Yeah, we got some pretty brutal, there might even have been like a death threat or two.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Death threat to Carson. I don't think they realize who they're threatening. Yeah. We'll go into
That's
that
funny.
Later. Yeah. What do you have to say about it?
We're in the business of making beer. I am not in the business of making people upset.
Right.
So that was a bad decision on our part. It was a joke. Which today America is very, very sensitive in all aspects of America. It was a bad decision and we erased it right away because we knew we were upsetting people and I didn't want to do that. I'm not in the business. I'm in the business of making beer. And I am an artist. I'm an artist before I'm a brewer. So that was kind of the hard part for me because this was a label.
Being censored.
I did. And I look back to a million instances, everything from NWA to Two Live Crew to Explicit, put on every tape cassette to Rage Against the Machine, to whoever you want to name music-wise, and art, Van Gogh, all the way to everything. Everything scrutinized under a microscope. And there's part of me, you know, that wish we never did it. It was a bad decision.
Yeah.
That's really what I can say. And we retracted it. We took it back. We rebranded the beer.
Yeah.
Beer's a great beer.
Years ago.
And I still get scrutinized at
It does still pop up in articles.
It really does. It's like, but there is something that I never did say. And there's a lot of bad journalism. Journalism is an art form in itself where people interview and listen to a person and then make an adjudication and write their article. I was never interviewed. I was just scrutinized. So
just hit pieces. Yeah.
You know, that's a hard thing, but you know, I have two daughters.
Journalism, you know.
I have two daughters. I have a better, you know, I live in a house of women, an old farmhouse, and the last thing I need to be categorized as is a misogynist. And I'm not that.
Yeah, it's got to be frustrating. I mean, you know, I know you. I've seen you interact with your daughters. I've seen how you treat the mother of your daughters, the internet has not, right?
Correct.
And that can be very hard when they're slapping labels on you, based on a label, based on a pure label, and nothing else. And you know,
which was Brian's label. No, I mean, to be honest.
It was, right.
It's Brian's artwork that they're scrutinizing, and Brian is a phenomenal artist.
Yes, so Brian does, we should talk about that. He does all of the artwork for the brewery, all correct. The graphic art,
I come up with an idea, and we brainstorm together, or he does vice versa, and we brainstorm together. So,
and this is another guy forever. Who is not a misogynist whatsoever. No. Nope. I mean, he's a gentleman.
Exactly.
Who's, you know... but, you know, yes, there was a time when I think beer labels really were art. And now that craft beer is so big, maybe they aren't art anymore. Maybe they're advertising and labels and they can't be separated. You know, like it's...
There was a part there where, and we still are, we're kind of the scapegoat for this whole... movement of, I mean, let's face it, we go back to St. Pauli's mm-hmm. beer, you know, it's been, you know, boobs out. I mean, I didn't create Oktoberfest, you know, I didn't create Lederhosen. There is a sexuality that's
attached.
You mean
attached. The Drindle? Lederhosen is not sexy. I mean, that's what
Drindle.
The guys
yeah, sorry. The Drindle.
It looks terrible.
You know,
the Drindle.
I did not
different story.
Create that. And that has been attached to beer. And maybe...
Well, none of us created sex, right? And none of us created the idea that humans like to have sex with each other. Somehow, you know, sex in general being related to a product has, because it's been abused... many, many times, it has been demonized. And not to say that the panty dropper label, I mean, it's almost like, it's a little bit like the Spinal Tap scene, you know?
Sure, I concur.
You've got a woman with her panties around her ankles, staring at a group of men. You know, I'm not excusing it, you know, on the surface of people being offended by it. But you know, there was also, you know, being offended by something isn't, worthy of a death threat. You know,
no.
It's not, you know, you can certainly, say, hey, this is in bad taste and I don't like it and I'm not going to buy it.
And
the anger, and the jumping to conclusions that you're a bad person because mm-hmm. of it.
Sure.
Those are the things that are maybe a little frustrating.
I've had some women, in the industry discuss it with me and they were not entirely enthralled by it, and you know, I apologized,
say the least,
and I said, you know, and I generally do, I feel that way. I have this, I had a kind of essentially a heckler, who has visited me multiple times in Oak Park, and it's been very abrupt and very rude. And I get where her, I finally pulled her to the side and I said, hey, you know, can we talk? Like, this is absurd. And I get where she was coming from. And through the explanation, she had told me that she had been raped. And I told her, my exact words were, if I would have been there in that situation or have known and you were in my close circle or anything, I would have tried to protect you and beat that motherfucker's ass. You know, so there's that aspect And then I really had to think about it, like, hey, you know, and I told her, like, I didn't create this to isolate your or marginalize your feelings. We didn't create this. We erased it for that factor because we're not in the business of hurting you. And I wanted her to realize who we were as humans. And I don't know if she ever grasped that. We shook hands and she was like, I wish you luck in the future. And the heckling stopped. You know, and I think there's other people out there that have this falsification or justified opinion of me that is incorrect. And they're going to be haters. And I will put this out there straight up. Everyone knows where I'm fucking at every day. You got a problem, come see me. You want to come beat my ass? You know where I'm at. I'm at Pig Mines. Usually 6 days a week. You can find me. I'm there.
Yeah. Well, the internet isn't very good at beating people's asses. But,
yeah.
You know, I had a troll from my association with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, you know, I reached out to her and I went and I talked to her. And, you know, it's like anything. Maybe, you know, when you have a face-to-face conversation, which is impossible on the internet, you know?
Sure. Or especially, like, writing your adjudications of me at 2 o'clock in the morning after you've been drinking all night.
The internet, yeah. In terms of the rush to grab...
Roseanne Barr, yeah. You know, don't do any ambient tweeting either.
Yeah, right. She's, I mean, it just shows you what life is right now, especially bringing that up. I mean, it is. It's
We just live in a very... You nailed it at the top, where we just live in a very particular time, sensitive time. And the internet's the worst in terms of rushes to judgment without any facts at
sure.
all. So.
At the same time, you have to be cognizant of that. And yep. if you want to be a good businessman, you have to be cognizant of that. I mean, so many people are saying,
yep.
oh, you know, Roseanne, for instance, man, if she would have just not tweeted that stuff, she would have just kept her mouth shut.
Roseanne's been an asshole since day one. I mean, no one's liked Roseanne for years, you know?
And
I mean,
she's, you know, apparently very racist. So it's almost better that she got that out there, you know, and so we all know. But you know, it's a complicated subject, you know, and
it is, and we don't really bring it up. We really don't. You know, I feel like I've never had any closure with it because it's a consistent thing that pulls up, and all I can do is defend myself at that point in time. But you know, I'm saying it here is like, I fucked up.
Okay.
I am sorry, and I'm moving forward. And if you judge my beers based on that, that's sad because I'm making very competitive and great beers in the market.
So. More than that, if they're judging you on that, I think it's wrong. I mean,
I'm okay with that, I guess, because I've lived with it for this long, and anyone can judge anyone. You know, let's face it, we're all guilty of that.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah,
we
right.
all make mistakes.
We're human, you know? And I hope people can really gather that from knowing me in a personal interaction or a social interaction that I'm not a bad guy. Ask my daughters.
Yeah.
They might tell you I'm an asshole, but you know.
Well, any 11 year old or 13 year old.
Yeah, don't ask him in like 4 years.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Don't even tell me about that because I got two beautiful ass girls and I'm going to be in big trouble. All you dudes out there, just realize I build guns.
That needs to be another beer name then, like stay away from my daughter. I don't know what type
no,
of beer
I don't
that
know.
Would be, but
I you know, lately
I don't think you want to name a beer. Just a little professional advice for you, Carson. Let's, you know, don't aim a beer after a gun either.
Yeah, right, right.
Okay. It's
yeah,
a
thanks.
Bit of a hot topic.
Yeah.
And
I concur, Pat.
Yes.
I
maybe threatening to shoot a child on a beer label might not be
actually don't,
no
yeah.
It's kind of funny.
You know, call me crazy.
You know, I'm 39. I just turned 39. And I kind of just got on this, like, back to my youth a little bit. Like, I'm waking up and I have like a physical regimen that I'm doing in the morning. And I've been doing it for about 2 months, you know, 2 or 3 months, trying to stay at it like everyone struggles with in America. And my daughter is kind of looking at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, when you think that dude's going to come and whoop my ass, that's not going to happen. When you, in 5 years, when you're out... starting to date boys, which I can't even talk about currently. But
your poor daughters. They're going to be fine.
No, I know. And that's, you know, that's part of something that...
And they're going to date, and then you're just going to have to, you know...
Deal with it.
Yeah.
I know. To deal with it. All I can do is just try to make them make the smartest decisions that they possibly can.
That's exactly right, you know. And that's what I tell my... Well, I've really only had the conversation with the oldest, but the whole thing was about respect, you know. Respect her wishes, respect her as a person.
Sure.
And everything else will work out.
It's funny because you're coming from all boys and I'm coming from all girls.
I know. There is a difference, right? I don't know the difference.
You know, maybe we won't have that meeting or have that hangout where you're bringing all the boys to my house. And
I hear wedding bells. I don't know about you guys, but I hear wedding
bells.
Time
to merge.
No, I was just telling Pat. I told Pat, I was like, hey, man, you know, you should bring, you know, you, Ange, because, you know, Pat and his wife and me and my better half, we all went out to dinner just, you know, a month or two ago. And, you know, we live right near the Sycamore Speedway. So they're dirt track races and they're awesome for kids.
Yeah, my kids have been there many times. They love it.
And we've been talking about, you know, redoing it again, maybe doing a camp out, smoke meats, all this stuff, you know, cook food. And,
yeah, I think we definitely got to do it. It's time to merge the families, Carson. Yes. Like Game of Thrones, we're going to have an arrangement. It'll be fine. Don't worry.
It's kind of cool, though, because I do see Pat's kids, like, doing kung fu and stuff, and I'm like, oh, these kids are cool.
Yeah.
Rugby, comedy, you know. You got some good boys there,
so, Pat. Yeah, so do you. Our kids, we're lucky. We're lucky men. That's the thing.
Yeah. I think children are products of their environment.
I think children are the future. I think Whitney Houston might have said that, the great poet Whitney Houston.
I think it takes a village. I'm sorry, I have no kids that I know of.
That was terrible.
This is your son, Caesar.
It's a podcast, so they can't see me rolling my eyes.
Yeah.
But,
man.
Speaking of terrible journalism, this is a podcast. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
See, you know,
this is not journalism.
I've kind of grown on the whole podcast thing.
Have you?
Yeah, just as factors of listening to Joe Rogan. I won't get into my political standpoint or any of that, but I listen to some other guys on podcasts. And, you know, there's nothing better than hearing a couple people that you respect and whether they.
I guess so, but I don't give a shit with Joe Rogan. I mean,
no, he's just
why should I? He's just a comedian.
Yeah, and he's a smart, talented guy.
But
and,
if he's talking about politics, I don't want to hear that crap.
Well, not necessarily that. I like listen. You know, he has a million different. And then
that's the thing.
When I was in that span, I was able to find quite a few other podcasts that I like honed in on, and you know, some are like on food, some you know, political standpoints. But you know, it's kind of cool to listen to people discuss things sometimes. And
I hope
it's
so,
really good.
We're on a podcast.
I know. And it's really good. It's really good to hear people share opinions most of the time, talking it out, not yelling, not losing their temper.
Not the cable news where it's like point A, point B, and people yell at each other.
Or whatever, you know. Or, yeah, watching people that are paid by a network to say exactly what they are supposed to say.
Or other interests, right.
Bunch of guys sitting around talking. Everyone's got a different opinion. You might not agree with that opinion, but you're going to walk away with it all high-fiving and going, hey, you know, we all spoke our thing. And
yeah,
I think there's a part to that.
Yeah, I feel like we do start needing to have like a disclaimer at the beginning, though, that like this is just a bunch of dudes talking.
You know, if people don't know that, it's their fault.
I don't even have like a computer in front of me to like fact check anything I say. This is just all coming out of my mouth straight into this microphone. I just want people to know.
I kind of like that guy on Rogan. I forget the guy's name, but he's always there, like in the background. Like he's like, did you Google it?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we do all day at work.
Yeah.
We're like, if we don't know the answer, Google that shit. Everyone's Googling.
Yeah.
Facts have no place on beer opinions.
And my motto is if it's on the internet, it has to be true. So, you know.
Truth. Hashtag truth.
Oh, man. What are the future plans for Pigs Minds and in the brewery?
Let's talk about the expansion.
Jeez, sorry.
No,
that was the.
Everyone does that, and I think it's easy for them to do it. I think
the
it
Midwestern,
just makes sense,
you add an S to everything.
So, yeah, we're putting in a 30-barrel brew house and a 7,000-square-foot addition onto the building with a Wild Goose canning line. And we're just going to make a shit ton of good beer. We're going to really concentrate on barrel aging now that we'll have the ability to make the proper viscosities without additives. We've been adding, you know, sugar and syrups for years because my brew house is made to make 3.5% beers, not 8% beers. I also have a new brew house coming like in 2 weeks. So Pat, you'll have to say goodbye to your pub system.
I mean, is it going away completely? I thought you were
No, we're keeping that one's going in the Newlands. We built a Newlands and it's going to be here. It was done fabrication like 3 days ago. So
sweet. Congrats.
Can I buy it from my backyard?
We're going to check the jackets. We're going to rip the clad off. We blew the jackets, steam jackets out on it. Just so much use. The system was built in like 89 and it was designed to brew like once or twice a week. And we've been doing like, you know, just 10 turns a week, you know, so, upwards sometimes. So it'll be cool. We got that. We got the expansion coming up. Next week, I have a free show at Pig Mines.
All right. Ooh.
It's the Toasters, the New York ska band.
Love the Toasters.
We are doing a collaboration. Yep, Pat and I had once.
That was our first hang, I think, wasn't it? Our first hangout together, maybe.
Was it?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
We saw them at
the Bee Kitchen. I had some extra tickets. Bucket, one of the guys, put me on the list there. And they're coming for their second year here at Pig Mines. Free show and a collaboration. My first Kolsch I brewed.
Oh.
It's called Friends. You will see a little bit of that in the market. And we'll be releasing that. And it's just one of the best days at Pig Mines that we've had when we did the last show. So this year will be even better.
Sweet.
Awesome. That's awesome. If you're coming from Chicago for that show, I highly recommend the Days Inn in Love's Park. I've stayed many times.
That's a Holiday Inn.
Oh, it's a Holiday Inn. Holiday Inn.
Pat has stayed there. I have stayed there. And that's where I will be attending that evening. That way I can Uber directly from the brewery.
Well, yes. I've woken
and
up
everyone
with some
stays out of a pretty nice new pair of bracelets.
Nice and safe. Yeah.
Awesome. What's going on with the beer tours? You had a big one the other... It's happening.
It's all summer is here.
Summer's here.
Yeah, so just rocking and rolling on the three neighborhoods, tasting beer. We've actually had Pig Mines beers on the tours every now and then. So,
awesome.
And they always go over really well, so thank
Great.
You.
Great. Well, thank
and,
you.
The beer list, just like everything else, it just blows my mind how much great beer there is to taste. So,
there's so many good beers out there.
And thanks, Patty Long's obviously punches above its weight all the time. So, yeah.
Good to hear.
How about you?
Rocking and rolling. Obviously, the beer garden at Kaiser is in full effect, and we've got the new roof out there, new heater system.
Yeah, the new roof looks great.
Yeah, got fans.
Yeah, it does look awesome.
We had my good buddy Hippie played out there last night. Live music on Thursdays, and it was storming, and we just shut that roof and didn't miss a beat. It was pretty incredible.
That's outstanding.
Yeah, really nice. And Patty's is, rocking and rolling. We've got beer events pretty much every weekend. Still doing the beer and bacon tasting and looking forward to a fabulous summer, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. These brewers, though, are really pissing me off. They're running away with the division right now. I know it's only May, but...
You're a St. Louis guy.
Right? I'm a St. Louis guy. Yeah, they kicked the crap out of the Cardinals last night. My only solace is that the Cubs are sucking too.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what? Milwaukee needs something. It needs something.
Shut up. That's loser talk. Milwaukee needs nothing. The baseball podcast is coming up next.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we've covered it all. I think I want to thank Carson, of course, for coming
out here.
Thank
you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Having a very frank and honest conversation. And, it's always a pleasure, man. I love you, buddy.
Yeah, totally, bud. Good times.
Absolutely.
More to come. More beers to come.
Yes, the very last keg of Monchichi Throwdown is on tap right now.
Yeah, come and get it unless I drink it all.
Yeah. It's really good.
I might actually skip traffic and just have to drink a couple Monchichis.
There you go. Done and done. Well, thank you all for listening. As always, tell your friends. Leave a review. as long as you liked it, of course. And, you know, find us at beeropinions.co. And until next time, thank you all.
Cheers, guys. You.